This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years now, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind some landmark projects. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. I find more and more that some of the more successful companies in this business are a bit like stealth submarines. They run silent and deep, and you don't hear much about them or see them around. That would apply pretty nicely to D3, a New York company that's in the LED display business. They started outside in New York's Times Square with some iconic LED boards. Now they're inside with narrow pixel pitch displays in some premium retailers. I'd say who they are, but that's going to get them in trouble. Suffice to say, if I told you, you'd reply, "Oh, really?" They're also doing corporate, including a job they can talk about, the amazing 13K lobby of the new Netflix offices in LA. I saw D3 recently at Infocom and asked why they just had a tiny booth and no LED displays when they were surrounded by less successful companies with massive displays. They did that because LEDs are already becoming a commodity. At least that's what D3 co-founder Marek Adriansson told me. The real secret is in the video processing and software, and of course, the idea and the content. It's also, of course, way cheaper to pull that off and easier for setup and teardown. We went to the back of the noisy Infocom hall to chat, and you can hopefully hear us over the guys who decided to tear down some nearby scaffolding just as we got started. So Marek, thank you for taking the time. We're hiding in the back of Infocom, and hopefully the guys that are tearing down some scaffolding won't make too much noise or crash. And I want to first ask about, just give me the rundown on D3, because you guys have kind of popped up in the last couple of years. I know you've been around a lot longer than that, but you're now starting to make some noise in the marketplace. So what's the company about? What do you focus on?
So D3 LED, we are now in our 10th year. And we started it when we realized that there was a differentiable market out there. When we went into the market, everybody said, "Why are you getting into a commodity market?" And we said, "Well, because we don't really believe it's a commodity market. It's, yes, there's a lot of players out there that believe it's a commodity, but to us, it is a very unique marketplace. And that's part of the reason we also have been at the forefront of technology. And we are so much involved in what people call the spectaculars." Mm-hmm. Everybody can build one little square sign. When it comes down to these complex signs, people predominantly favor us. They come to us even though we're a much smaller company. And that is because our technology is amazing. You know, we are a combination of engineering power that really doesn't exist in the marketplace for the size that we are. We have very few salespeople. We very rarely go to trade shows. As I say, we take orders. People come to us because they have heard about our unique capabilities of what we can do technology-wise. And we really enjoy what we're doing. And that is starting to show in the marketplace with very unique projects that are just not cookie-cutter designs.
Yeah, I walk back here looking for your booth and walk past a forest of big LED screens from North American resellers and lots of companies from Shenzhen and so on, showing their pots and pans. Come to your booth, and you don't even have an LED screen here. And I asked you why, and you explained it to me.
Precisely, because everybody looks at a screen and goes like, "Oh, here's another screen, it's another screen." And it is true that, you know, the front part of LEDs is becoming more commoditized. For us, it still isn't, but in order for people to understand that, we need to drive more of the things that truly make us unique. And what makes us truly unique is the control system. Mm-hmm. And being able to create these brandscapes that really differentiate from the rest. And how do we do that? We really do that by creating pieces that are not just square little boxes. And if we do make square little boxes, they're not little boxes, they're really big boxes, and those become unique. But any, you know, television is a certain format. You know, you had a high def, now it's 4K. So what you'll see all around there, you'll see high def screens, the 4K screens, but then what happens when the architect wants to put together a lobby that's 100 feet wide at 1.9 millimeter? Well, guess what? You got a 13K wide screen, you got only, you know, 1800 pixels high, but that's a lot of pixels, right? And in order to drive those, in the past, what people and what they're still doing is they'll just handle it as multiple HD screens or multiple 4K screens, but that is very different than what we do. We literally drive all of these displays at what we call a native resolution. It makes it very easy for the content creators to create content. Mm-hmm. It makes it easy for them to make very high resolution content. So the other challenge is when you see these screens, the content on it looks not really great, because to be able to play these things, they will use content that is made for 4K. Mm-hmm. And typically what's made for 4K these days is for streaming, right? So streaming on a television set or your phone is different than showing content on a display that is 100 feet wide at 1.9 resolution. Mm-hmm. You will see the difference. So you have to be absolutely pristine quality content. Mm-hmm. So we will go and play the high resolution content that the content creators can create these days, that, you know, they start uncompressed. So we take uncompressed files. If they're working on Macs, the highest quality content they can get is ProRes 444 10 bits. We take those files directly, we play them directly. So, you know, we'll play 13K ProRes 444 files at 60 frames per second. So that requires a lot of processing power, requires a lot of, you know, thought going to being able to do it, but it is necessary. So we pretty much engineer what is not available. It's very easy to say, oh, here's 4K, let's use some MP4 codec to do that. But when you do that with content that is that large, you will not create a beautiful surface. And that's what we specialize in. And the device that we are showing at this show is our IMS Pro, which really is a combination of, you know, 30 years of my engineering of what we have done with every display you see in Times Square in one box. It is very high resolution processing. It is very high resolution content playback. It is scaling, it is positioning, it's taking inputs from multiple sources, outputs to multiple sources, all of these things in one box, one-stop shop. Mm-hmm.
And this is a box that's the size of a wine fridge.
It is, and everybody asks, why is it so big? Well, it is so big because there's a lot of technology in there. You know, it's up to 144 cores of processors. You have GPUs, you have SSD, you have RFPGAs, which are very advanced, to be able to drive up to 100 million pixels out of one box. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, why so many pixels? And because, you know, people are starting to build bigger and bigger displays. We had to build this box because we just did Netflix, which was 66 million pixels. So we build it big enough for 100 million pixels, and next year we'll push the envelope again. It really be designed based on what the market is asking us to be able to do.
And is that something of a mistake that's happening out in the marketplace, is you're getting brands and systems integrators, like everybody involved in our project, they're deciding on the big-ass canvas that they want, figuring out where they're going to put it, and then they look around and go, okay, what are we going to use to drive this?
Precisely.
And they run out and they find an i7 PC and say, we're done.
We're done, exactly. So, or they go like, what's the difference between, you know, a $2,000 player that I can play there? I say, well, you know, you can play a $2,000 player in there, but it's not going to look right.
Yeah.
It's not going to be able to create the content. Now, the reason the surface is so big is because you want to be able to show it off. It has to be high quality, especially, you know, what we're doing with lobbies. These are where the corporate identity gets established. Nobody wants to come into this location and see their brand being completely changed from what it originally is supposed to be. They're used to the most simplest but highest resolution content possible, which is print, right? So they want print quality. And to be able to do print quality at these resolution, you just need to be able to drive very high resolution displays.
So I assume, like a lot of companies that work with very well-known brands, that you're not always able to say who you work with, but who can you tell me that are clients using your displays and back-end technology?
Yeah, we unfortunately can't talk about our most prominent client. They're very large, probably top 10 companies in the world. retail giant. But the other ones we can talk about. Pretty much in Times Square, our background goes with working with ABC, NBC, CBS, all three morning shows use our displays. Mm-hmm. We've got Fox, we have Walgreens, a very large display there. Netflix now is a big client of us. So our roster of clients is the who's who in, mm-hmm. in America as far as top brands are concerned. Victoria's Secret is a client. So we have lots of very large clients.
And what caught my eye was what you did, well, that other unnamed company. I've seen that stuff, but the work that you did in the Netflix lobby in LA is kind of mind-blowing. And I've run stuff on my blog, so maybe some listeners have seen that, but could you describe what all is going on there?
Sure. So the Netflix display is, again, the architect came and said, we're going to make this lobby our key point where, you know, the client gets establishes their opinion of you. So the lobby has 80 feet of 1.9 millimeter display. Mm-hmm. And then there is one wall that is a device wall that is a projection mapping with two projectors onto 100 different surfaces to mimic how Netflix gets watched on all these different surfaces, whether it's tablets, phones, or television screens. And all of this thing is driven as one cohesive surface from our devices. And the pixel resolution ended up being close to 13K, about 1,800 pixels high. And because it's a lobby, they didn't really want to have too much motion in here. Right? They want to be able to have people sit there for a while, not being bothered by all the surface movement. Because you have to be careful when you have such a large surface where you can make that happen. So the content will be for 10 minutes, this very slow moving video of their main shows. They call it their worlds, like Orange is the New Black, Daredevil, Troll Hunters. So what you'll see is, you'll see slight motion in them. You'll see like a little steam rise from the buffet. You'll see the fans rotate in the prison scene from right. Orange is the New Black. And then once every minute, you'll see something slightly different. And that was the other thing, that there was a deliverable. They wanted to have an hour of unique content. Well, when you have an hour of 13K content, that's a lot of content that has to be rendered. So the clever thing that the content creators did is they created these base layers, which were 13K, that have this slight motion in it. And on top of that, there is an animating sprite layer mm-hmm. that shows the slight motion of a video on top of it for people to go like, wait a second, that's unique. I haven't seen that before. And they have 40, 50 different sprites for each of these pieces. So it's constantly playing something unique. Every minute you see something unique being added to. But in order to be able to do that, we had to composite 13K onto 13K was these sprites. Working with the content creators, we realized that not all the time did they really just want to do a linear key. Sometimes they wanted to do a linear key, sometimes they wanted to do live compositing. For example, if there was a cab driving by, showing and reflecting the lighting effects onto the background layer. Mm-hmm. So we implemented that. So now we have two different ways to key a signal, whether it's a linear key or a live composite. And we're doing two 13Ks, ProRes 444, in real time. And that's what you see there. Each of these files is like 400 gigs in size. So when people look at these things, they say, oh, that's a big file. I say, yeah, those are big files. But again, it's a big screen. And you have to have a really high resolution for the quality that we're looking for.
And when you got involved in that project, was it pretty much a blank canvas? Like, we want to do something in our lobby, or was there already a mindset of a designer or something that this is what we wanted to ultimately see out of this space?
Once it was obvious what the surfaces could do, you know, that's the first thing that we do. We work with the creative people to say, okay, now you have LED here. Here's what you can do with it.
Yep.
And you know, we talk about best practices. The first thing that they tried to say is, well, my content is 4K. What do I do? And you know, because the content part is a really important thing. And we have a screen that's 13K wide, but only 1,800 pixels high. Most of your 4K content really doesn't work very well. Mm-hmm. So we talked about best practices, how you can create elements from your existing content, where to render unique content, where to integrate other content. But it was a collaborative effort of seeing what we could do and them pushing the creative envelope. They wanted to do originally a lot of the sprite layers with HTML5, because we are also supporting HTML5. Until you realize that HTML5 runs out of juice once you pass 4K, and 13K HTML5 is kind of, yeah. That's not what Google built HTML5 for. So that's when we had to go into the live layering and compositing of all these surfaces. But it was a collaborative effort, and the end result is really the we feel that we have done our job when the initial sketches that are drawn by the artist in their concepts become realized. Mm-hmm. And we actually make that as part of every project file. We take what the original sketch we got on the back of the envelope, or right. A realization that the designer had in mind, and then look at the end product and see how mm-hmm. close it got. And we really pride ourselves working with the client. It's a collaborative process.
What was the pixel pitch in
that? It's 1.9 million.
Okay. Is there kind of a sweet spot at this point for narrow pixel pitch displays?
Yes. It really has to do with the distance that people are working from. The closer you get to it, obviously the higher resolution you want to be. One of the main retailers that we worked with decided that 1.6 was the right resolution for them. With Netflix, 1.9 ended up being the right resolution. 1.9 is a pretty sweet spot. I mean, the pricing of all of these have come down dramatically, and the 1.9 really offers high enough quality to be able to get right up close in a lobby environment at the price that people feel most comfortable spending it. You can go to higher, 1.6, 1.2, but the pricing still is up there. But again, it's a scale that is constantly going down. So the driving the many pixels is going to be in our favor, because the higher these resolutions get, the more pixels need to be driven, the more powerful the systems that drive them need to be.
But your product is like, if a company is working with D3, they're using your video processing solution and so on. Could they use somebody else's LED display?
We feel that our design is pretty agnostic. So we have outputs, we have industry standard inputs and outputs, but we have unique things to offer when we're driving our own LED displays. Mm-hmm. And so we prefer to convince them that our LED product is the right product. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we integrate others' LEDs into our product if necessary. So for example, when we did the Good Morning America set, they had some rental pieces that they want to incorporate into it, and we can drive those as well. But when we start moving other panels onto our displays, and we look at LED panels a little bit in that sense of a television. Mm-hmm. We don't build television screens. We build the architecture to drive, and LED panels are becoming more of that sort. So to us, we are able to take the LED panels and drive them with our proprietary protocol that has many benefits over industry protocols that are being used. Mm-hmm. Higher color depth, higher refresh rates. And all you really need to do is go around with a camera and videotape displays to be able to see what kind of processing goes on there. And as it's becoming more and more important, where people are trying to memorialize where they are at with cell phones, not only what your eye sees is important, but what your cell phone sees is important. And that's the difference between processing.
And what are you going to see that's different?
You're going to see very high
frames.
Yeah, you're going to see frozen frames. It's the refresh rates are very important when you're doing this those newer high-speed cameras. Mm. And your eye may not see it, but the camera will see it.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
I'll walk around the show over the next 3 days, and I will undoubtedly walk into booths where they'll have, you know, this arms race going on of trying to get the narrowest pixel pitch. Does it really matter once you get down to like 1 millimeter, whether it's 0.85 or 0.7 or whatever?
No, and when you're looking at a display, there is many things that go into making a good display. You know, the viewing angles, the contrast. And sometimes when you push those resolutions tighter and tighter, it's hard to get something that's optimal. So you have to really evaluate all of these things. Mm-hmm. What's the viewing angle? What's the contrast ratio? And just higher pixel count isn't always the most important. It is, you know, they're trying to get over a boundary of the large LCD displays. Naturally, those now have gone from 1920 by 1080 to 4K. So suddenly their pixel pitch has gone down dramatically. So the arms race is going down to the bottom. You know, when you have a 4K display that's only 25 inches, that's a lot of DPIs going on there. So they want to keep up with that, and also to make sure there's all different choices for different marketplaces. You know, in command and control, where you're replacing these LCD screens, it's important to have the resolution that you need to work right up close with it. So all of these are just part of the offering in the market.
Mm-hmm. How does a systems integrator, or particularly an end user that's new to this space, they're thinking about a big feature wall in their lobby or the lobby of their client, and that LED would make sense. And just in the same way with digital signage software, they look out and see that there are, oh my God, there are hundreds of options. There are scores of options for LED displays. And to the untrained, they would come to a show like this and, well, they all kind of look the same. How does one get started in figuring out, you know, quality versus, I don't want to say crap, but you know, not the same level of quality?
Like any business, there are tremendous depths to this business, right? It's a complex, when you really want to do it right, it's complex. There is a lot of things that you need to take into consideration. You're dealing with visual acuity, you're dealing with electronics that's very high speed, very high pixel counts. So do your homework, go see the market, but talk to people that really know, and they will save you a lot of aggravation. And that's pretty much what we do. We partner with our clients. So clients come to us and they say, this is just a soup of technology. We really don't care. At the end of the day, this is not our business. We want to be able to get, you know, clients into the store and tell our story in an effective way. And you know, this is the visual thing that we're trying to achieve. How do we get there? So work with people that really know what all of the different facets of that business can give. And you know, that is our core fundamental of our company, is to partner with our customer. Whether that's an integrator, whether it's a customer, we work very well with different levels because we're a very flexible partner. We like to educate people and tell them all about what we can do for them. And sometimes when we don't have an answer, we engineer an answer because we're an engineering-driven company. Mm-hmm. And that's the fundamental products that you see were all basically built based on the customer going like, it wouldn't have been neat if I did this.
Right.
I had a joke that when we were in Times Square, every display, every company that came into Times Square had to build a display by the Certificate of Occupancy Codes of New York City. So they wanted to build a display, and every brand, of course, when they came in, they said, well, we want something that was never done before. So every 6 months, we would hear this pitch from a different customer going like, we want something that was never done before. And it constantly allowed us to push the envelope further and further and come up with things that were never done before. And that just drives your R&D engine to be able to create newer technologies, exciting new ways to make the customer successful. Mm.
What are the components? I assume that you guys have your own displays. You're sourcing stuff from China and from other jurisdictions to put the stuff together. What are those things that really make a difference? Is it the diodes that you use? I just, it's not an area I'm
Yeah, well, the most important thing is your electronic design. And everything that we have is our electronic design. At the core of our technology is how we drive LEDs. It's the high-speed processing, it's the FPGAs that we built. It's all our intellectual property. And we have been pretty much building on that platform since the company was started 10 years ago. So we have products that are up completely downward compatible, but the LED processor that we are just introducing with the Netflix job is 10 times more powerful than our previous version. And it's the most powerful processor in the industry right now, and that is how we're able to drive so many pixels from just one box. So that's your fundamental most important thing. The LEDs, there are many LED manufacturers out there. Some of them are really expensive and really good, and some of them are really inexpensive and not very good. So what you get what you pay for is a very true synonym with that. And LEDs are almost like grapes for wine, right? They're all different types.
Yes.
And you can make vinegar with them, or you can also make very high resolution displays for them. So that's very, very high part of the equation. You want to have your best wine, you need to be able to get the best grapes. And best grapes cost more money than the cheapest grapes that you make vinegar with.
It's an interesting analogy. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah. Well, also, a part of the reason I good at analogy, because LEDs, every LED that gets manufactured is slightly different, okay? The chemistry on it is slightly different. Mm-hmm. That's why the process of binning is very important. When you put them together, you want to have to make sure they're exactly matching, because the eye is so sensitive, it'll pick up the slightest differences. So binning them closer together will allow you to get higher quality displays that are brighter, more color uniform, so you don't have to degrade as many of them.
Yeah.
Similar to grapes, right? Every one of them is unique. Every LED is unique. And there is a pyramid that shows LEDs that are manufactured every day and how many of them are used for indications, like on a bus as a, you know, it's stoplight, versus a display quality LED. And that pyramid is very sharp on the top. The top ones go all the way to the top and they cost the top dollars. The bottom layer is very wide. There's lots of LEDs out there. And they're good for showing a stop sign, but they're not very good for showing LEDs that have to show absolute color accuracy and where the eye will pick up even the slightest difference.
So you would be able to, as a buyer, walk around the show and see the whole waterfront of that. You're going to see stuff that, to an untrained eye, can you pick that up?
The most important place where you pick it up is 2 years down the road. That's where you start seeing the huge differences.
Okay.
Everybody can make an LED that looks good the first 1,000 hours.
Okay.
It's after year, what happens to them, how they age,
right?
What happens to them, how they fail, how they become less bright. How energy efficient they are is another extremely important aspect. And the highest quality LEDs are also the most efficient LEDs. So there's a lot of R&D going on in creating good LEDs. And LEDs over the last 15 years have gotten so much better than what they were originally. And you have to remember, 10 years ago, we were not able to get anything. And suddenly we are, 12 years ago, the displays that we put in didn't even have blue LEDs in them because they were so expensive. And now it's all full color. So LEDs are, there's a lot of engineering going into them to make them better every year. And that R&D costs money. Mm-hmm. That's what you're paying for when you're paying an expensive LED. It's all that R&D that went into creating a great one versus just taking one design that is 10 years old and just making billion of those and just trying to sell it cheaper and cheaper.
There's manufacturing developments in the industry. I mean, Sony is here again a year later with its CLED. I don't know that it's on the market yet, but it seems to be a different process, and there are other companies talking about, I think, almost printing LEDs, that sort of thing. Is that where this is going, or is that more on the commodity side?
No, whatever is in the commodity side eventually gets to our part of the business too. The key to be able to create the seamless displays is, it's really to you know, with consumer technology, you can buy a display that is a size, right? It's 355, it's now 84, 90, 118. But after that, when you want to cobble up multiples of them because you need to fit something in a corridor that's 27 feet wide by 12 feet high, you have to build it based on a certain module size. And these module sizes, the seams between them, are probably the most critical element to make sure that it looks completely seamless. And that makes it more complex to create these inter-module seams to make those disappear. So although there's a lot of exciting developments in the OLED and in printing very flexible LEDs, when it gets down to putting them into a grid that is seamless, that can expand seamlessly, that's when the challenge comes. Mm. And doing that indoor is much easier, of course, and then we have the whole other equation of doing them outdoor, because our displays, we have indoor LEDs and we have outdoor LEDs. Mm. And the outdoor LEDs, I put it akin to having, you know, 27,000 television sets that you just bought in the store sitting in, you know, the 60 degree weather of the summer and the minus 30 degree weather of the winter, and constantly being rained on day in, day out for 10 years and not being washed. So what happens, right? So LEDs for outside are much more tricky. They're much more difficult. But we have a wide range of product that goes from indoor to outdoor, from 1.2 millimeter indoor all the way up to 24 millimeters outdoor. And then from there, the next phase becomes really the architectural lighting. So we have, you know, a pixel to us is a pixel, whether it's 1.2 millimeters apart or a foot apart in architectural lighting. And throughout that whole spectrum, the key is to intelligently drive that pixel, to give it the color depth, the pixel depth, the refresh rate, and the content to be able to have it do anything you want to do, and to be able to intermix them with each other, to be able to combine them with each other, to create these brandscapes that capture eyeballs. That's what we do.
Okay. Who's the client right now? Is it mostly retail?
Retail opened up a whole large sector of our business, but it could be anybody who's trying to catch your eyeballs. And advertising is a very lucrative business. It always has been. Mm-hmm. And people that are these days in advertising were not the same people that were in advertising 5, 6, 7 years ago. Any person that has a surface that they own, that they can put a message up there, is a client.
Sure, but that's primarily outdoors.
Indoor or outdoor.
Okay.
Yeah. But indoor, retail, indoor, yes, is big. Command and control is big. But anybody who is trying to create a platform where a story could be told is our client. And a story can be told in retail to capture clients. A story can be told inside for command and control. It can be used indoor for broadcasting, for broadcasters to be able to use as a canvas to augment what they're doing. Architects that just want to create environments that are immersive, that capture people. So our client base is growing. It's everybody who wants to tell a story with light is our client.
Are we just at the early stages of this stuff?
It is, because we eventually will be in a world where instead of painting your walls, you'll have information on your walls. And what you do with that information is going to be up to you, going to be very flexible. So yes, we are.
But what about, like LEDs are brittle, they're sensitive. You can't bang, you can't have a little kid running up to an LED wall and pounding their fist.
Not yet, that's true, not yet. But every day we come up with better technological advances to be able to do it. But yeah, right now in retail, that's a problem. When we build a display that costs a mint, you don't want a kid coming over there with his fist starting pounding on it, because he will cause some damage. And having lots of retail customers out there, we get these calls of, oops, there was a mistake, somebody ran into it, was a shopping cart. So our repair business is also very strong. Repairing these 1.2, 1.6 millimeter LEDs is a sight to be seen. We have a cadre of young people that have incredible sharp eyes. And they only have sharp eyes for 5, 6 years. Very steady hand, they don't drink coffee, and they're able to work on them on the fly while they're in operation soldering LEDs on and off these modules.
Really? From the front in the middle
from
of the store?
From the front of them, in the middle of the store. After hours, they'll just come over there and go
this
through.
This is like microsurgery.
Microsurgery, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, once we put a display, because, you know, these displays are fragile. When you put them together, you know, they'll bang them together in the corners. But the first thing that happens after a whole wall is built, the technician will go over there and will repair, you know, a couple thousand LEDs that got damaged. Mm. Just has to go through with a fine tooth comb.
Is there a project you're working on right now that maybe you can't say who it is, but you can kind of tell me what people will see?
To us, the both retail as well as branding is a big business. People want to tell stories of their brand, and the places where that gets told most effectively is at corporate headquarters. Mm-hmm. So the spectacular has moved to a place closer to you than it used to be.
So what happened with Netflix is something that you're going to start seeing a lot more of.
Exactly. There's lots of brands out there. They all have their castles, as we call them, and their castles has to look really good.
Yeah, I would imagine just about any entertainment brand, once they sort of saw that, went, I like that. Let's do that, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Merrick, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.